If you're listening to the CD or the audio book, glad to have you back. Let me recap the past two times that I've read the beginning of the book and give you so you can get up to date and tune into what we're talking about. Sunrise at Two Lines is a book of visionary fiction. It's about a young boy named Billy King Frazier, who is on an ice fishing trip with his father and falls through the ice, has a near-death experience, and within the near-death experience, he's taken to a castle, and what he describes as a castle, and in the castle, he's taken to a room, a bedroom, and there are 12 paintings on the wall in this huge white room. The room overlooks the ocean, and what Billy is finding out is that each time he picks a painting, he's told to pick a painting by a man named William, who has become his guide through this near-death experience. And each time Billy picks a painting, someone pops in to the picture, if you will, to tell him about the painting and the meaning of the painting. Each painting has a poem with it. And so we're up to chapter 7. The chapter is called Silence. Now, Billy, after his near-death experience, has come back to his family and virtually freaked out everyone in the family except his grandmother. And his mother doesn't want him telling what happened because he speaks so frequently of God that it upsets her. And his grandmother, his Nana, is very interested in what he has to say. And he lives with his grandmother. Now, he's just beginning to tell her more about his experience, and he's explained some different things. He just mentioned that he spent a lot of time quietly with this guy named William, that William talked a lot about silence. And we're about to enter Chapter 7, and the title is Silence. So, you ready for some breakfast? William asked as he gently nudged Billy's shoulder. Billy heard the question through a sleepy haze and just smiled his usual good-natured waking-up smile. He rolled over, rubbed his eyes, and then ran his hands through his hair, giving his head a quick series of rubs. Then a big yawn, and he was ready to talk. "Yeah, I'm starved," he said. William told Billy that he wouldn't be starved for long. They went downstairs for the usual breakfast banquet with all of its usual gorgeous colors and sweet smells. Aaron was at the breakfast table, and so were a few other people. They all smiled and said their morning greetings, and Billy noticed a particularly warm and friendly smile from Aaron. At that precise moment, Billy felt like he had known Aaron for a very long time. Before he sat down, Billy went over and gave Aaron a tight hug around the neck. Everyone looking on just beamed. Right after breakfast, Billy and William headed out for their customary morning walk, and as was also customary, one of the lion sculptures had something to say as Billy walked by him. "Don't let Aaron fill your head with all kinds of foolishness and flowery thoughts. He thinks life is just one big joke." As soon as the lion spoke to Billy, and Billy turned to look at him, he saw Aaron tying a big towel around the lion's ears and mane. Aaron had the biggest silly grin Billy had ever seen, and he told Billy not to pay any attention to the lions. Of course, that was the same thing that William always told Billy. The lion with a towel tied around his head looked really silly, and it made Billy giggle. Then Aaron whipped off the towel and zipped back into the house with a "see you later, Billy." It was hard for Billy to take the lions too seriously for that moment. He thought he heard a low roar, maybe like a grumble. William had walked ahead a few steps, and Billy ran to catch up. As soon as he caught up, William asked Billy what painting he had picked the night before. When Billy told him that he had picked the one called Transformation, William said that he thought so. When Billy asked why he thought so, William told him that he had seen the new connection between him and Aaron. "He's really nice," Billy bubbled. "And what do you think of his story about the painting?" Billy told William what had happened as he looked at the painting, and then he told William what Aaron had said about the artist who painted it. Billy went on to tell William what Aaron had said about the story of the painting while William listened patiently to the whole story. By the time Billy had finished, they had come to the patch of light green moss in Queen Anne's Lathe. As they sat down, William went back to his tale about the lions. He told Billy that the lions will say that they don't believe in the possibility of transformation, or more accurately, they doubt that there is any such thing. "The truth is," William said, "is that they know people can go through transformation. They just don't want anybody else to know about it, because transformation means the end of their control of anyone who experiences it. No more Dunbar and Furman, no more fear and doubt. That's what transformation is all about," Billy said in a sing-song rhythm. Then he burst out laughing. William did too. "Well, another poet among us," William acknowledged as he rubbed Billy's head again. "Exactly right." Billy was in a really silly mood, and the thought flashed through his mind that he would be bald by the time he left the place, because William was always rubbing the top of his head. William went on to remind Billy once more that transformation is real, and that fear and doubt are only stone lions that can't do anything to us except talk, and they can only talk if we stop to listen to them. Just tell them to hush if they try to bother you, Billy, and believe me, they never give up entirely. They'll creep up on you sometime, and before you know it, you'll be listening to them. But as soon as you realize it, remember what the lion looked like with a towel wrapped around his head. Just laugh at them, and then tell them to be quiet. Walk away. Remember who you really are. Do you remember? William asked softly. Of course I do, William. I fell through the ice and came here. Don't you remember? Well, that little wiseacre remark cost Billy another brisk rub on his head, and he and William laughed and laughed, and then they each put their arms around the back of their heads and laid back on the moss. They were silent for the longest time. They lay there just peaceful and silent, enjoying the sounds of birds and little chipmunks and squirrels scurrying around near them. William spoke first. Billy, you have received a beautiful gift. Only a very few people on earth really know just what you were given. Only those who experience what you are experiencing can understand what happened to you. But a lot of people love to hear about it. So make sure that you share whenever you can, however you can. It's not only the lions, old Furman and Dunbar, who will try to convince you that it wasn't real or it didn't really happen. Some other people you meet will talk to you about this will have no way to understand. They'll be frightened of what you say. They'll think you're making it up, and they'll make fun of you and criticize you and even threaten you for speaking about it. Just remember the experience. No one can take it away. No one can argue it out of you. You know that. As long as you remember that, fear and doubt have no control over you or your life. What can happen, though, is that you can make the mistake of thinking that God will take the gift back because of something you've done or will do that you know is wrong. That's just old religious myth that is simply not true. God is a God of love, the God you met when you fell through the ice. God will never take the gift back, Billy. It was given to you to share. If you ever let other people or fear or doubt or even your own thoughts begin to chip away at it, at the reality of your experience, it can happen that you begin to believe that you have lost the gift or that God took it back. Just remember how you came to know that God knows you and loves you. It was your own experience, not someone else's. And just so you don't misunderstand, I'm not saying that it's all right to do something that you know is wrong to do, but we all make mistakes and do things that we come to regret. Sometimes we even do things that we know in our hearts are wrong to do. But as soon as we have a quiet moment to reflect, we're reminded of the good person who lives in us and inside of everyone, we change our minds. And just as soon as that happens, we are forgiven by this God of love, no matter what we have done. The problem is not what we have done. The problem is listening to the lion and forgetting to tune into our hearts and what we really know deep inside. And what do you now know deep inside, Billy? William asked him. That God loves me just the way I am, no matter what, and he's given me a special gift, Billy told him. William just smiled and kept on talking. This is why you are here, Billy, to solidly seal the gift in your heart. That is why you will stay here for a while and listen to the 12 stories and see what is in the 12 paintings. You are meant to share this gift with anyone who asks you about it or anyone who comes to listen to you talk about it. If someday someone tells the story of what happened to you, people will come to know about this gift from hearing about it, and that may start them on their search for their own transformation. They may come to wonder about that empty feeling inside and begin to believe that they have forgotten something very special about their life and begin to believe that they really can overcome fear and doubt and even go beyond that to the transformation that you know about. They might begin to believe that they, too, can experience that light, that sunrise in the heart that you experienced. Everyone who comes to this experience of transformation comes to it in their own way, and they may think that their experience is uniquely theirs, but the experience is the same for everyone, maybe in different degrees, but it's the same. They may describe it differently because, as you know, you can't really put it in words. You can talk about it, but it must be experienced to be understood. And everyone who experiences transformation speaks of it in very similar ways. Some really fortunate people, people like you who have received the gift and who are able to share it, are still in danger of being snared by fear and doubt at some time in their lives, even after receiving the gift, even though they know in their hearts that they carry the gift. They let fear and doubt in again, and then, for a time, they keep the gift locked away. They're changed forever, but in a way, they are back to being controlled by fear and doubt and what other people think. They haven't lost the gift. They've just stopped opening it. You can help them reopen it. How this could happen to someone, even though they've received this gift, will be explained to you by some of the others here at the house, and maybe by some life experiences that you are yet to encounter. So if you don't quite understand yet, just be patient and listen and learn. When he finished that, he asked Billy if he was ready to go back to the house and pick another painting. Billy jumped up and ran as fast as he could. As he ran up the stairs and past the lines, he pointed at the one who had the towel wrapped around his head before. Billy grinned a great big grin. This time, the lions didn't say a word. As Billy burst into the house, he was stopped abruptly by the delicious smell of apple pie. He turned and saw the young girl he had met when he first came to the house, putting a pie on the kitchen counter. Billy walked over and leaned his nose close to one of the slits in the pie crust. "Don't burn your nose," Anna said with a giggle. Billy looked up and giggled too. Then Anna read his mind and told him that he could have a piece of pie as soon as it cooled. Billy had not really spent any time with Anna since he came to the house. She was about his age, maybe a little older, and he was kind of surprised to find someone close to his age at the house. He started to ask her if she knew about the transformation and the stories of the other paintings, but she just smiled. She told him that he would find out when he picked her painting. That bit of news really excited him. So he spun around and headed for his room to pick another painting. He realized as he bounded up the stairs to his room that he was singing out loud, just like Aaron did around the house. He hoped he was a better singer than Aaron, but he didn't really care. When Billy went into his room, he thought it would be a difficult choice to pick a second painting, but it wasn't. He walked right over to the one with the title Silence. This time he took it off the wall and read the poem on the back. It read, "Words can't fly like this. Words grant scant relief from gut wrenchings. Words frame and box and shove, screaming yesterday's torment, pretending to know tomorrow's. No, give me dead silence, sensuous vision. Attune me with billowy blue's impregnating power. Teach me to swim wide-eyed into the viridescence until I disappear into sunsets and dreams. Let me abide in magenta robes, bleeding, sweating, weeping, until mystic labors once more give birth to unspeakable joy beyond thoughts and words. Leave me speechless. Leave me alone. I don't want your solace. I just want to paint. Paintings from the soul." Billy put the painting back in its place and went once more to find out who would tell him the story of Silence. He was hoping that maybe this one was Anna, but as he was coming down the stairs, Vincent was coming up the stairs. He didn't say a word, he just pointed Billy back toward his room. They walked in, and Vincent went right over to Billy's most recent choice and took it off the wall. Billy expected Vincent to hand him the painting like Aaron had done before, but instead, Vincent walked over to the window and looked out over the ocean. Looked at the painting and back at the ocean a few times. He stood there for what seemed a long, long time to Billy. Vincent had thick and curly red hair and a ruddy complexion. His clothes were rumpled like he had slept in them, and he tugged at his shirt as he talked sometimes. His voice was raspy, and he looked kind of fierce and angry most of the time. Billy had seen him pacing back and forth on the porch, almost like he was giving some passionate speech or something. But today, Vincent had a real peaceful and quiet way about him. Finally turned to Billy and came over and sat down beside him on the bed. He handed Billy the painting without saying a word, and Billy looked at this painting called Silence without saying anything himself. He remembered how Aaron had asked him to look at the painting for 5 minutes, and he remembered what had happened after the 5 minutes were up. He kind of expected this painting to go through the same sort of change that he had seen in the painting transformation. So he just sat quietly staring at the painting. Neither he nor Vincent said a word for the longest time. "I see the ocean, and I see," Billy finally started to say, but as soon as he started, Vincent stopped him. "Don't tell me what you see. Tell me what you feel, Billy," Vincent gently interrupted. "I feel like I'm flying down and looking down at this beautiful water," Billy went on. Once again, Vincent gently reminded Billy to talk about what he was feeling, not just what he was seeing. "It feels like what I felt when I fell through the ice, when the beautiful blue colors flashed and flashed. They were just the most pretty blue colors I'd ever seen. They made me feel peaceful, and at the same time, they made me feel like there was something more to see in them. Part of it also feels like I felt when I was banging on the ice and struggling to break through, and it makes me feel like I'm drowning. I'm going to die. It makes me want to swim hard, to feel the energy and power of the water, to ride the waves and laugh and swing and sing and swim to safety. Then it feels like something or someone is coming to help me, and make sure I make it back to shore. At the same time, it feels like something is holding me back, and now it feels all peaceful again. It feels like I'm back on shore and laying in the sun and drying off in this warmth. There's something warm and golden that's part of this pain. It's beautiful. It makes me feel like everything in the world is beautiful. There are no words to describe exactly what I feel. Now someone comes up and wraps me in this heavy, soft robe. It's a deep red color, almost purple, and it's really heavy and warm. It makes me feel sleepy. I feel like I'm ready to fall asleep, but then I remember that feeling of floating in the light. My whole insides are so bubbly and happy. The floating feels like I'm on an air mattress in my grandparents' swimming pool. Vincent listened and looked directly at Billy without saying a word. When Billy looked up at Vincent, he was kind of startled to see Vincent looking at him so intently. Then Vincent told Billy about a time in his life when he tried to use words for years and years to try to tell people that they could see in life what Billy had felt in the painting by just looking at it for a few minutes. He told Billy about a time when he went to live with people who worked in coal mines deep in the earth, and how he tried to tell them about the strange beauty of hard, hard work and coarse clothing and lined faces, but they wouldn't listen. They insisted that the grim circumstances of their life were anything but beautiful. Vincent said that he tried to tell them of a love of life that knows no circumstance. They didn't know how that could be. They wouldn't listen. They still don't, he said. He told Billy he decided to try painting and put into pictures the strange beauty he spoke of to these people. To him, it was no different than the real beauty that can be seen in nature, in the sky, in the fields, and in people's faces. To him, this beauty was a beauty that is beyond physical and visual beauty, a beauty that clenches life in tight fists. Vincent called it the beauty that can be seen and felt in the gut, in sweat and tears, in grizzled faces, in a life of struggling and pained expression, the beauty of real life with no perfume, Vincent called it. Vincent told Billy that he grew up in a home where they read the Bible. His father was a preacher, and he used to tell Vincent that if he would look closely, he would find God in nature and in other people. Vincent told Billy that he believed this was true, and he tried to find a way to put the truth of it into everything he painted. He painted with this in mind as much to convince himself as to communicate it to others, but he always knew that he painted to express the presence of God in the world. And he felt that people who knew the experience of God or were searching for the connection to God in their hearts would feel this in his paintings by just looking at them. Vincent would look out the window most of the time he was talking to Billy. And it made Billy feel that Vincent was always looking for something to maybe put in another painting or find another way to communicate what was in his heart. "Did you paint all of these paintings in my room?" Billy asked him. "No, I just tried to do my part, Billy. I just tried to do my part." Billy saw a real sadness come over Vincent. And he wasn't sure why. He found out when he asked him the next question. "Why did you call this one Silence?" Vincent was quiet for the longest time. When he finally spoke, he went on to tell Billy how he painted for 10 years trying to capture the essence of life, real life, in his paintings. He talked about being with people in the dark mines and in their homes and painting pictures of them. He painted in the fields and in the woods, both day and night. He felt driven to paint and to try to communicate what he could not put into words. One day, he told Billy, while he was painting and in complete silence, his whole consciousness changed. He wasn't expecting anything to happen, but in the silence, the message he was trying to put into his paintings came through to him in a way he hadn't expected. It was the same message in a way, but it was beyond what even Vincent thought it was supposed to be. He described to Billy something very similar to what Billy had experienced. Vincent even used similar words that Billy used to describe his experience. He said he saw these incredible colors and saw a huge light and felt God's love and God's presence. And Billy remembered thinking at the time that what William said was right. It's the same for everyone. Vincent said that he felt an incredible surge of energy and joy from this experience. He called it an experience of deep intuition. He was sure that his paintings would reflect his new insights, and to him, they did. But years and years went by, and he never sold any paintings or received any recognition as an artist. That wasn't his real goal, but it had an effect on him. Fear and doubt began to creep in. Not so much about his ability as an artist, but about his insights and reason for painting. So he told Billy he went silent and focused his attention more intensely on his paintings. Vincent told Billy that he had found something beautiful and wonderful in silence. He found a harmony and a peacefulness in the silence that he couldn't find anywhere else in the world. And he would spend hours sometimes just sitting silently. He would do things like focus on the horizon, or in one of his paintings, or just on his breathing. He said he sometimes would put his attention on his breathing rhythm. He would be aware of when he was inhaling and when he was exhaling. He would do it very gently and silently. This would quiet his mind, and in this quiet, he would feel God's presence and a peace of mind that was impossible to explain. Tell Billy that he had always had a hard time around people and often felt awkward and uncomfortable, especially around women. He decided to tell me about his troubles with women, but then told Billy that he was too young to hear about it, let alone understand. So he didn't go into any detail that Billy could remember. But in the silence, Vincent said, he could feel a sense of balance and comfort. And the more time he spent in quiet time and solitary time, the more he became convinced that his paintings could say more than he ever could with words. Billy recognized much of what Aaron had told him about artists and why they paint in what Vincent was saying to him. And he remembered how William had told him that people who had received the gift of knowledge about their connection to God could still be caught up by fear and doubt for a while. This is what Vincent had said to him a few minutes earlier. He was about to share his thoughts with Vincent when he heard Vincent say something that was very familiar to him. "Sometimes I think I would just like to be invisible." And Billy heard those words, the exact words that he had said to himself, word for word. He blinked and suddenly realized that he was still on Panther Rock. He had been remembering the times with William and Vincent so vividly that he forgot where he was. But he was back home, and he had come to spend quiet time there on Panther Rock, and he, too, was feeling invisible. He quickly checked to make sure he was back and visible. He was, and so he breathed deeply and stood up. He didn't know how long he had spent in his reverie about being back at the castle, but he thought it must have been a really long time. He quickly climbed down and headed back to the house. When he walked into the house, he saw Nana putting an apple pie slice right beside a tall glass of cold milk on the kitchen table. "I thought you'd be back about now," Nana smiled. "Well, you were right as always, Nana," Billy chirped. He pulled up his chair and started in on his pie. As he took the first bite, the words he'd remembered hearing from Nana came to his mind, that she would have a piece of pie for him as soon as it cooled. It seemed like all that had happened an awfully long time ago to him now. As he was finishing his pie, Nana asked him about the paintings, how he said that he was going to paint them. Billy liked to draw, and he was always copying cartoons from the paper and his collection of comic books, but he had never done any painting. Billy just nodded affirmatively. "How about if I pick up a paint set for you," Nana offered. "I'm going downtown this afternoon. Do you want watercolor or acrylics or oils or what?" Nana was really creative, and she liked to get involved in creative projects. She even tried her hand at painting a few times, so she was pretty excited at the prospect of seeing what Billy would do. He told her to get whatever she wanted, and he would do the paintings with whatever she brought home. Well, later that afternoon, Nana came home with acrylics, brushes, and some thick practice paper for Billy. Acrylics are water-based and clean up really easily, so Nana thought those would be the best for Billy. He was only 10 years old, after all. Billy was eager to try the new paints, and he liked them right away. He liked the way they smelled, and he liked that the paint washed right off his hands with water. He had watched Nana try to paint some paintings with oil, and he didn't like the smell of the oil and turpentine, or the fact that it was really hard to wash off the paint. So he was really happy that Nana came home with acrylic paints. But there was a problem. Billy thought that he would be able to paint the paintings he remembered easily. He was sure that he was supposed to paint them, and he was sure that God would give him the ability to paint them just as he saw them. It didn't happen that way. It didn't even come close to happening that way. The colors and shapes that Billy created were dark and dense. He had no idea how to put the mix of colors and the shine and glow in the paintings that he so vividly remembered seeing. And that was just enough to cause Billy to forget an important lesson he had been taught. When Billy saw that he wasn't able to produce the paintings the way he remembered them, he let just a shadow of doubt in. Pretty soon he started questioning whether or not he would ever be able to do the paintings he saw so clearly in his mind. Sadly, he even began to doubt the reality of what had happened to him. It was just a little doubt. He really knew that he had been given a gift to share. Nothing was going to rob him of his experience. He told Dunbar to hush. Billy's glow dimmed ever so slightly that day, and he became more silent. He thought about Vincent. Chapter 8 is called Devotion. Now, Billy didn't lose his glow, and he didn't lose the effect he had on people. His grades continued to be excellent. He was still a standout athlete, and he could really, really dance. but he stopped talking about what had happened to him as much as he did before his attempt to capture the paintings on his practice paper. Of course, Rachel, his mother, was relieved, but Nana was perplexed by his silence. Nana was so intrigued with Billy's stories, and she was so eager to hear more, that it was really hard for her to accept when Billy wouldn't talk about his experience so freely anymore. Nana jumped to the conclusion that she was losing yet another battle to her daughter. No matter how much Nana prodded and hinted, Billy wouldn't tell her the other stories. When she would ask why, he would just shake his head and tell her it wasn't time yet. He did, however, continue to paint. Pretty soon he forgot about trying to paint the images he saw in his room in the big house on the ocean, the castle. He just painted pretty pictures. He could draw really well, and it helped him paint pretty well. He copied other artists' work, and he painted realistic scenes and landscapes and seascapes and covered bridges and sailboats. He used nice colors that he would see in nature and through the seasons in Maine. But he never painted from his heart. He hadn't become an artist yet, and he knew it. He also knew that he wouldn't give up. He would keep painting until his ability as an artist matched his knowledge of that perfect place within. And when it did, he was sure that he would be able to paint the paintings his mind could see. Well, he was pretty sure. He wasn't about to give up anyway. One late afternoon after school, Billy came home, determined to work on his skill as an artist. It was a nice day, and Nana was kind of surprised that Billy had come in and gone right to his room. She hadn't had a word from him in an hour or so, and she hadn't heard any music coming from his room. "Billy, you okay?" came that shrill voice spiraling up the stairway. "Can I bring you a soda?" "I'm fine, Nana. I'm just painting," Billy reassured her. Nana was about to pass up the opportunity. She grabbed a soda for Billy from the refrigerator and bounced up the stairs like a schoolgirl. "Oh, that's wonderful, Billy," Nana said as soon as she saw what he was working on. Nana always encouraged Billy and said something positive every time she saw any of his artwork. She had done that since he was a little kid, and he would show her cartoon drawings that he had done. "I'm glad to see you're so devoted to painting," Nana said as further encouragement. She hadn't meant anything particularly meaningful when she used the word devoted, but the word resonated in Billy's heart. He remembered another painting and the story that went with it. Billy thanked Nana for her encouragement, but she knew from the tone in his voice that something inside of him wasn't satisfied with the painting he was creating. As soon as that thought entered her mind, Billy said just what she was thinking. He wasn't satisfied. Something was missing. He was feeling more and more discouraged with his inability to produce the paintings he felt he was supposed to produce. Yet, something Nana had just said, something that came fleeting across his mind as she spoke that word devotion, made him believe that he might find his art one day. He asked Nana if she would like to hear another story. Of course, Nana was surprised, and she certainly was eager to hear another story. She sat right down in his bed without another word. Billy didn't need a reply. He could tell by the way she was looking at him that she would absolutely love to hear another story from his experience. It had been at least several months, a real long time, since he offered to tell her another one. For reasons known only to Billy, this is the one that came to his mind and the one he wanted to share with his grandmother. "I want to tell you about the third painting I picked. I know I haven't told you about the second one yet, but today, for some reason, I want to talk about devotion. You just used that word, and that's the name of the third painting I chose. I think I need to remember something I was told about this painting. I was in my room to choose another painting, and I decided on my third choice. I picked it mostly because I liked the colors. It was foggy and raining and almost dark, and I could still see some of the colors in the water and trees. The painting named Devotion reminded me of the way it looked outside right then. Almost as soon as I decided that would be the next painting, I felt someone come up right behind me. So you picked Devotion, huh? Well, that one's mine, so I guess you'll hear the story of Devotion next, young man. I jumped when he said that because I didn't hear him come into my room. Most of all, I jumped because he knew that I had just picked another painting, and he knew the name of the painting I'd picked. That seemed to be the way it always worked. His name was Jonathan. He was kind of heavy, and he always stood very straight with his shoulders back like a soldier or something. His eyes were bright blue. He took my hand and shook it firmly. Then he smiled and made me feel really relaxed and peaceful. He walked over to the painting, lifted it off the wall, and turned it over. On the back of the painting, there was another poem taped to it, just like the others. It read, "Devotion. I must leave. I cannot subscribe to your blind creed. Your blue-green feathers and golden tongue will not tether me. I will not become a parrot in your pulpit. I will not die choked by a white collar. Save your wretched lives, you barren robbers, who cannot bear the mournful sighs who gorge on the blood of Christ, blind and deaf Pharisees, on your knees, pretense that neither knows nor sees, blasphemy, cannot lead me home. I must be shown the ransom note. Devotion. Jonathan quoted the verse word for word without looking at the writing. Anna turned pale when she heard Billy quote the verse from memory as well, and she looked at Billy with the strangest look. And how do you remember every word of the poem now? Anna asked Billy. That was the second time he had done that. I don't know, Nana. I can just see them. I can see the painting and the words are right there in my mind. What do you think they mean? Nana asked impatiently. I can tell you what Jonathan told me about this one, Nana. Do you want to hear what he said? Nana said she was sorry for interrupting and asked Billy to go on with his story. Billy smiled and took one last sip of the soda Nana had brought up to him. And while looking out the window of his room, like he was seeing the images of what he was about to share, he continued with his story. Jonathan asked me to look at the painting for a while. We sat down on the end of my bed, and Jonathan put the painting in my lap. Then he asked me what I saw. At first, it just looked like a lot of colors, like the ocean. Then I saw more stuff. I said it looked like a house at night, and the wind was blowing really hard. It looked like it was cold and dark. But the more I looked at the painting, the more I could see what looked like angels flying around. And I saw a man way in the background looking out to sea. It seemed to me like he was trying to call to someone, but they couldn't hear him. It was like when you read tea leaves. I could see a whole story, and the more I looked at the painting, the more the story went on and on. I told Jonathan that it felt like there was someone or something, like a secret that was being kept in the house. I imagined that there was a parrot in the house that would just repeat what people would say to it without really knowing what it was saying. Jonathan smiled at me and started telling me about his life. He told me he used to be a minister, preacher, but he left the church because people just didn't get what he was saying, or he couldn't say what he really wanted to say. He said he wouldn't settle for what he called being a parrot in the pulpit. Then he asked me if I mind talking about Jesus. I thought it was okay because Nana talked about Jesus and Muhammad and Buddha and Krishna and Moses and Rumi and all sorts of people like that. Jonathan seemed really like that. He said that people get all funny and weird sometimes because so much has been said about Jesus that scares people, makes them upset. But Jonathan said that Jesus was a real person and a real nice person and not someone to be afraid of for any reason. He talked about Jesus, all right. He talked like he knew him or something, like he had conversations with him. He said that Jesus told him that he didn't want to create some exclusive church club that claims to own some special right to their own interpretation of the truth. He wants us to love and respect everyone, no matter what they look like, and no matter what church or religion they belong to, or what they believe. Jesus just wants us to love one another, simple as that, he said. Jesus wanted to be heard for what he was really saying, about our connection to God being just like his, but people just wouldn't listen to what he was really saying, Jonathan told me. Jesus did what he said he would do. He is who he said he was. We are who he said we are. He said that Jesus was talking about something inside of us that is the most important thing. A kingdom inside, Jonathan kept saying. And he kept saying that this kingdom inside is so beautiful, so beautiful, so beautiful. And when we find it, he said, we are in the garden. If we just take one look at this kingdom inside, we will know what love really is and how love is waiting patiently all the time, like a flower waiting to bloom. And it's always there for us. As soon as we remember it is there, it comes out in full bloom every time we look at it. It's a beautiful garden that we water with love, Jonathan said. He said that Jesus taught about how to awaken our awareness, our consciousness, and have an experience of God. We can know. We can experience and be shown how to really, really know what love is all about in exactly the same way Jesus did. We can know this God of love the same way Jesus did when he was here on earth. When Jesus said that he was the only way to God, he was talking about his experience of God that we can experience as the only way. It is the experience of coming into the garden, coming into a conscious awareness of what love really is all about. And this truth is the same for all religions and ways of really expressing God. Jesus wasn't saying that we had to believe what he said only. He was talking about our awareness and consciousness of God, this God of love. This is the only way he was talking about. The only way is the way of experience, not parroting someone else's words or even relying on a book without experience. He wasn't talking about himself, Jesus, as the only way. He was talking about the Christ, which is the knowing, a personal experience of the kingdom inside of us is the only way. And he said that we all could have the same experience as he had with what he called his Father God. That experience, that beautiful experience, Jonathan called it, is the only way for human beings to come to know God. We can't use our thinking mind only, or just believe what someone told us. The only way to realize that God is real is to experience that God, that kingdom inside, in our hearts. Then we know that the kingdom within is real, and we know that it's not about religion only. It's about experiencing the core, the essential truth of the religion, not our idea about it, or some concept that we set in concrete. That's not it, Jonathan kept saying. That's not it. Not our ideas or somebody else's ideas. It's about knowing for ourselves. It's about experiencing God for ourselves. Nothing short of this is real for us. We can't fill ourselves up if we just talk about food. We have to eat it. We have to eat what the true spiritual masters have for food. Jesus told his disciples that he had this food that they didn't know about, that he wanted so much to share with them and with us. Eating this food that Jesus was talking about is what really nourishes us. And when we are nourished with this food, we realize the kingdom within. We realize that what we really want to do in life is, first of all, to be a kind and loving person. It's about being kind and loving and being good to people, to everyone. Faith and belief point the way, but the experience of God in your heart is the, quote, only way that Jesus was talking about to really know love. Jonathan said that a lot of people of other religions and spiritual paths and lots of other men and women know what Jesus was talking about and know it in the same way that Jesus knew it. That's what Jesus wanted us to know and still wants us to know. Jesus was not originally named Jesus Christ, Jonathan told me. He said that Christ is the experience of God in our heart. That's what Jesus knew about and what he wanted to teach others. Christ is the experience of God, Jonathan said over and over. That's why people called him Jesus the Christ and later Jesus Christ. Jonathan said Jesus is really sad that people use his name and act like Jesus is part of their exclusive club only. Jonathan said that Jesus is bigger than that. He came for the whole world, not just part of it. He told them that he had other sheep that they didn't know about. Jesus wants peace on earth for all men and women, everybody. How could he want an exclusive club that judges and condemns other people? That's not what Jesus did, and that's not what he taught. He told us that experiencing the Christ would show us plainly that God loves all people, and we would know for ourselves that God doesn't want us to call other people wrong or not love them because of what they believe. Jonathan said that a lot of people who call themselves Christians are not Christians at all. They are scared and empty, and they become parrots in the pews without even really knowing what it really means to be a Christian. That's because they don't know what else to do, and they've been manipulated and robbed by parrots in the pulpit who don't really understand what the real teachings of Jesus are all about. It's like artists who just paint and sculpt and create their art without any real connection to what art can be. These are not yet real artists in the art sense. They are copiers, more like the parrots who speak beautiful words but don't realize the meaning deep in their hearts and souls. They can paint wonderful pictures, just like people can say wonderful words. They can actually touch other people's hearts with their work and their words. But when they become artists in the true sense, the real joy in what they do will come through. Then the artist who creates the work and the people who see the work will see in it an entirely new light. This is really hard for some people to understand. People know when they are genuine in their heart and their religion, and they know when they are not. People know when they have received a special gift from God, and they know when they have not yet received it. Sometimes they fake it, and sometimes they settle for head knowledge, a concept of God, in place of an experience of God. Some of these people are so scared that other people won't think that they are good Christians, that they are the people who start fights and persuade and persecute other people, saying they are doing it for God. They are the very sort of people Jesus was so mad at when he lived on earth, and just like the people Jesus blasted, they have hard hearts and deaf ears. Not much has changed in 2,000 years, Jonathan said. Some people talk the talk, but not all of them walk the walk. Hate still doesn't cure hate. Only love cures hate. The last thing Jonathan told me was that a lot of people still want to be rescued from their negative thoughts and beliefs and what other people have told them. Some people have been kidnapped and robbed of what is their natural birthright, peace of mind and happiness, by people who Jesus called false prophets. Jonathan liked to call them parrots, parrots in the pulpit. He always had this fierce frown when he said that, and then he would beam with a big smile like he liked his own joke. The man in the painting, calling out the sea, is calling to these people who have been robbed, but they can hear him ever so faintly. If they will listen to what he is really saying, he will rescue them from sadness and fear and a feeling of emptiness. This is the meaning of the ransom note in the poem. It's for them. When I asked Jonathan what the title of the painting meant, he told me that devotion is a choice that we come to when we really make a decision to find out for ourselves what our life is truly about. Devotion comes and gets you, he told me. It comes to people at some point in their lives when they face up to the fact that they are feeling empty or sad or guilty or all of these things, and they decide to do something about it, even if they don't yet know what that is. Jonathan talked about how, when we are feeling lost or unfulfilled, we start trying to figure out what these feelings are all about, and we change jobs and change partners and think it's all about money or material things. But when we really recognize that our feeling of not being content and happy is really about not knowing who we are and what we are to do in this life, we will start on the path to devotion. Our devotion will be to finding out how to fill the emptiness, how to achieve peace of mind and happiness no matter what. When we come to that point in our life, we will know it. And when we are just stalling and denying that we feel empty and lost, we know that too. It doesn't matter what we say to others. We can't kid ourselves forever. One day, devotion will find whoever makes the choice to look deep within and not give up until they know for themselves that there really is a kingdom within. Then Jonathan asked me to take another look at the painting. When I did, I remembered what had happened to me when I fell through the ice. It was all right there, everything he said. I knew exactly what he was talking about. I had experienced the kingdom within, in a flash. I couldn't believe it. It felt so wonderful. It all came back as soon as I looked at the painting. I started smiling, and then I looked up at Jonathan. He had a great big grin on his face, and he hugged me really, really tight for a long time. Then he put the painting back up on the wall, turned around, and looked at me, and asked if I thought I would ever be able to tell anyone about this painting. I knew I could. I knew I was supposed to tell about it. But Mom wasn't going to want me to talk to anyone about what happened to me. Well, you're telling someone. You're telling me, Nana said very softly, almost in a whisper. Go on. Then he went on for just a little bit, because he remembered that Jonathan had told him that he had to leave the church because everyone got so mad at him when he would ask them to tell him about when they came to know God. He asked people when they came up for communion to tell him the date and time and everything, and a lot of people couldn't, so he wouldn't give them communion. He'd tell them to pray and seek to know God, do what Jesus really taught, and then they would really be Christians, and then he would give them communion. That would make a lot of sincere believers really upset today, Billy. There are many, many people who believe in God and believe that Jesus is God's Son, and who try to live moral and ethical lives. They consider themselves good people and good Christians, Nana said when she heard this. She had a real concerned look on her face. She was beginning to understand why Rachel really didn't want Billy to tell anybody else about what had happened to him. Billy told her that he knew that, and that they were really good people. But Jonathan told him that they had settled for a lot less than Jesus had for them, and they knew it. But if they had this inner happiness and peace of mind that only the experience of awareness brings, then they had come to know what Jesus had for them, and they knew when they had that too. So they told Nana not to worry, that those who knew they knew, and those who didn't know, knew they didn't know. He kind of chuckled when he said this because of all the news and knows. He repeated several times at this point that he was just telling her what Jonathan said to him. But Nana had noticed that sometimes it sounded like Billy was talking about what he had been told, and other times he talked as if he were the one doing the talking. As soon as he finished telling Nana about his third choice of a painting and the story from Jonathan, he turned around and picked up his paintbrush. He thought that now, after telling Nana the story about the painting named Devotion, he would be able to devote himself to his painting for sure. But before he even dipped the brush into a paint color, he was staring out the window, drifting back in time. People will laugh at you if you try to tell them about what Jonathan told you. They'll think you're some kind of Jesus freak or something like that, another self-righteous hypocrite. What do you know anyway? The lions were at it again. Billy and William were just coming down the steps after breakfast, ready for their customary morning walk and talk. William cleared his throat, and they stopped abruptly. Billy started to run ahead, but William sat down on the steps between the two lions and called Billy to come back and sit down beside him. Billy started walking back kind of slowly. He was beginning to really not like those lions at all. He looked at their frozen stone expressions, expecting one or both of them to start their usual put-downs, but they were silent. They won't say anything while I'm right here, William told him, so Billy sat down. William rubbed Billy's hair, like always, and pushed down on one of his shoulders in a playful way. Then William jumped up and started running down the beach. Billy knew a race was on, and he quickly ran after William, catching him just as they stepped onto the sand. As they walked, William asked Billy what he thought of Jonathan's story about the painting and the poem that he'd picked. Billy said he liked it, and it made sense to him, and he was working on the devotion thing. "Do you know what it means to be devoted to something or someone?" William asked him. "Sure, it means you're really, really serious about something you want to do, and you won't give up on it. And it means you really, really like someone a lot, like you're devoted to them." William loved the way Billy responded, and it made it really easy for him to further explain what the word devotion meant in Jonathan's story. He told Billy that he was right on the button. People who are really, really serious about finding peace of mind and enjoying life will become devoted to finding a way to do it, just like people who want to learn to do something really well, like play the piano or learn another language or become an artist. They must be devoted to practice and learning. But there's more to it in Jonathan's story. And if people in the Christian culture come to really know what Jesus and other enlightened teachers really taught, and they come to the experience of the kingdom within that he talked about, they will turn their devotion to Jesus in gratitude. They will understand that he really did ransom them from fear and doubt and bring them into a kingdom of peace of mind and joy in life. If their knowledge and experience comes from another religion, or not any particular religion at all, but from an enlightened teacher, then their gratitude would evoke this feeling of devotion to the source of their experience. It is this devotion, this commitment to not let anyone take away from them what they have received, and the trust that what has happened to them is genuine, that will keep them from being completely robbed of their joy ever again. So devotion, in this sense, means just what you said. It means you never give up. You don't let fear and doubt and what other people think stop you from being devoted. Billy's ears perked up at the sound of the words that William used, fear and doubt. And Billy chirped away at another rhyme. "Never listen to fear and doubt. That's what devotion is all about." William laughed and agreed. Then he went on to make another point with Billy. He explained how some people will become passionately devoted to a concept or a cause and sometimes become so strong in their commitment and cause that they forget to be kind and loving. This especially happens to people who do not have the inner knowledge, but only the book knowledge or believe in what they have heard. With the heart knowledge, kindness and love come as part of the package. With the head knowledge comes ego and pride. I know, they become parents that Jonathan was talking about, Billy piped up. "Well, I guess you got that covered," William said. "Yep," was Billy's reply, simple as that. Billy said that "yep" out loud as he was thinking back to his time at the castle. That was enough to bring him back to his room and his paintings. He still had a paintbrush in his hand, and now he had a new determination to reproduce the paintings he knew so well. And with that, I'm going to bring to a close part 3 of Sunrise of Two Lions. Thanks so much for tuning in to Papa Jeff. Relax in the quiet and enjoy some music for a few minutes before the next show comes up. See you next time.